So, may we start?
1, 2, 3, 4! So may we start? It's time to start. My time to start.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Third Act Podcast, episode number 204. I'm your host, Christian Esterbrook, and with me, as always, is Jericho Serrano.
Christian, don't you understand, Czech? What's going on here?
All right, dear listeners, we want to remind you that all of us here at the Third Act Podcast, we watch lots of films, we have lots of opinions on those films, and we're just pretentious enough to think that you care. Jericho, welcome back. It's good to be reunited once again. I know we got some stuff to get to for this episode, but I want to go back because you were dearly missed on our Pinocchio episode that Armando and I did, but you were pretty firm in that you wanted Armando and I to make that episode. So I got to get a quick review from you. You were an audience member, not a co-host that time. What did you think of the Pinocchio episode?
It was a great episode. I mean, it was nice for once to be able to sit and listen to the show because I don't listen to the ones that I'm on. But I am bummed that I wasn't a part of it because, you know, I did my prep work. I watched the Del Toro and the Bobby Z Pinocchio remake. So I was planning on being a part of that. I miss you guys, but it was still a great listen. And Armando dropping shock and awe using the M word masterpiece on the Del Toro. I did not see that coming.
That's exciting.
So I would give it's a strong 4.5 out of 5 for that episode.
Wow. Wow, I'm honored. That's wonderful. I mean, Jericho, one of the biggest casualties, though, of you not being there, I've been waiting and waiting and waiting. Oh, what did you think of Bobby's? And when we say Bobby Z, listener, of course, we mean Robert Zemeckis, as we call him, Bobby Z. He did Pinocchio last year. Del Toro did a Pinocchio last year. Pauly Shore did a Pinocchio last year. But first and foremost, what did you think of the Bobby Z version?
Wait. Paul, what's this Pauly Shore business?
Oh, yeah.
I remember on the feed, on our thread, this being mentioned, but this is an actual thing that happened? Pauly Shore made a Pinocchio movie?
Well, I don't know how much he made it, but he is a voice in it. So there's an animated film. It's really like crudely animated. It's this very low budget Russian production. And the original language is all in Russian, of course. And then for the U.S. release, they did a dubbed version. And it's Pauly Shore as Pinocchio, basically just doing a Pauly Shore voice. The trailer went kind of viral on Twitter when it came out. I recommend the trailer big time. It is quite silly.
Well, that segues nicely into my review of, I wouldn't even say silly though. I just would say Robert Zemeckis's remake in quotes of Pinocchio is ghastly, Christian. It's ghoulish. It's shockingly bad. I was kind of blown away by how sort of inept it was. I mean, I wasn't expecting anything because I've heard so many terrible things about it. But I thought at least on a technical level there would be something to talk about here because, you know, say what you will about Zemeckis, Bobby Z, but you know, he prides himself on being ahead of the curve. He's the kind of the thrift store James Cameron, you know, just always pushing the medium forward. And I have to say, there's like large stretches of this movie where it looks like the CG isn't finished. Like there's like glitches and gaps and things that it looks like they rushed, and it's an ugly film. It's terrible. And you know, Tom Hanks does provide some laughs as Geppetto, wearing a really bad wig and just like mugging wildly. And so there's some chuckles just by how terrible his performance was, but it was painful, Christian. So the biggest takeaway I have, not being on the episode, the reason why I'm so bummed is like I sat through the whole thing so that I can come on the episode and talk about it. And I wasn't even able to be on it. So it's a waste of time. The movie, yeah. not our show.
That's why I had to get your take on it, because there's no way I wasn't going to get your take after you force yourself to sit through it, because it's really bad. And I assume you'll agree with me that the decision to use the exact same design of the original Disney Pinocchio and just put it in this quote unquote real world is such a confusing, strange, really bad decision as far as the overall look of the movie. Like, it never can even settle in it can never even settle into the simple premise of the movie. Like, the idea of the movie never quite fits right just because that Pinocchio looks strange in this world.
Yeah. It just really feels heartless, soulless, just a way to generate more money and merch for Disney. It doesn't really feel that it has any reason to exist, unlike the Del Toro Pinocchio, which I think does. And I really liked that one. I'm not as much as Armando, but sure. Probably slide in close to where you were on it. Just the amount of work that was done alone, like the stop motion animation, it was incredible. And beyond that, you know, getting into some dark stuff like death and fascism and Del Toro's doing a little bit of a tweak on the story. So I thought Del Toro's Pinocchio was quite good. Bobby Z, maybe just go back to making, you know, Polar Express Part 5 or whatever.
I mean, I don't really want that either, but...
Yeah, well, we don't have to see. Unless Bobby Z comes out with a sequel to The Walk starring Joseph Gordon-Levitt, I'm out.
Sure. Or the Walk with Gerard Depardieu.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Even better.
That could be a good recasting. All right. Well, sweet. Thank you for some quick Pinocchio thoughts. But for this episode, what we're going to do, we're going to check out two Czech Republic films, The Fireman's Ball and Something Different, both fairly early entries in the Czech New Wave film movement. So, Jericho, I said we're going to call this episode Czech, Please. Talking about a couple of Czech films.
Yeah, I have to give full credit to you, Christian, for the title. I'm the one that kind of pitched this idea, but sure. You, my friend, came up with the title, which I think is one of our best. So, yeah, Czech, Please. All right.
I'm very happy with that, and I'm happy to be back to these themed episodes, Jericho. You know, we did a lot of these last year, but, I think I got into a good rhythm of those. And then we kind of took a little bit of a break with some end of the year stuff and some other things like that. But I'm glad to have a goofy title and a themed pair of episodes to talk about tonight.
Goofy title, but the movies. We're taking these movies very seriously, Christian.
Well, the first one's pretty silly, to be honest. Yeah, no. I think the first one's pretty goofy in and of itself. Before we get there, Jericho, I'll admit, even though we're doing a Czech-themed episode, I didn't do much research on the Czech New Wave. I know I've seen some of them, but I don't. I'm definitely not a scholar. Do you have anything to kind of set the foundation for us a little bit as far as like what we're talking about here in this era of Czech filmmaking?
Sure. I mean, I can give a little overview. I'm definitely not a scholar either, although I have dabbled in some Czech New Wave films, seen some stuff in the past that I don't think I realized was a part of the Czech New Wave at the time when I saw it. But it was a very radical period for Czech cinema. It started in the 1960s, where basically filmmakers were really finally able to broach controversial or taboo subject matter that had previously been censored. So many of the films were bleak in subject, but something I've noticed from the few that I've seen is the dark, absurdist humor that always seems to be present in all the films that I've watched that are part of this. And, you know, there's a lot of directors that we can get into here. Milos Forman, which we're talking about tonight. Vera Chitalova, which we're also talking about, but also Ivan Passer, Jan Nemok, Pavel Jurakek. There's a bunch of them. But I think the most notable films are The Fireman's Ball, which we are discussing, Daisies, and Valerie and Her Week of Wonders. Those are probably the top three that get mentioned the most, but there's quite a few. And it was an exciting time in cinema over there. So I think really, I don't think we've talked about anything that's in this time period from Czechoslovakia, have we, in the past?
We did talk about Daisies several years ago. I want to say 5-6 years ago. Mm-hmm. I think it was a Flixmas thing. I want to say Fixation recommended the three of us watch Daisies, which I remember we reviewed, and all three of us, I think, were really, mm-hmm. really taken by it. That's a fantastic movie. So that one we've talked about. Anything else would have been purely accidental or possibly even forgotten. I don't think we've covered anything else besides Daisies.
Yeah, and that sounds right. And I do remember that now. That was a Flixmas gift, I believe. But yeah, I mean, that's the basics.
For sure. So we got a couple to talk about tonight. Let's start off with The Fireman's Ball. This one is written and directed by Milos Forman. It stars Jan Vostrzil, Joseph Sabinek, and Joseph Valnoa. The synopsis: a volunteer fire department throws a party for their former boss, while the whole of town, with the whole of town invited, but nothing goes as planned. Pretty straightforward synopsis there, but that is the setup, and it's a pretty straightforward movie. According to IMDb, I got 73 minutes for the runtime here at Fireman's Ball. A pretty quick, breezy film that's consequential for Milos Forman. This is the first film he shot in color, and it's the last film he shot in Czechoslovakia before coming to the United States. And I want to say his next film is Cuckoo's Nest, right? One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is what he did after this.
That sounds right.
I think that's the order of them. So kind of a pivotal film for him, and one that's very well known in this film era. And I don't know, for whatever reason, I didn't really know anything about this, Jericho. I knew the title. I knew it was one that came up in discussion of Czech films. The three you said, this, Daisies, and Valerie, whatever the subtitle is for that movie. Those are always the first ones that come to mind when I think of this era in films or hear it referenced or anything like that. So for whatever reason, I don't know why, I associated this as kind of a big, like, important, you know, serious film to be considered. Maybe even like a, you know, eat your vegetables type thing. Like, all right, it's time to sit down and watch the, you know, most notable Czech New Wave film of all time. Here we go. Like, let's turn it on. Let's get to it. But the movie is very slight and so silly, like much sillier than I could have imagined. I mean, most of what happens in this movie is just the setup and payoff of different gags, right? We got gags here, Jericho.
There are gags, but I would argue it's done in a kind of semi-naturalistic way, where it doesn't feel like setups and like typical slapstick. It feels to me very improvised at times.
Sure, yeah, and it does. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I mentioned this is kind of a breezy movie, and it doesn't overstay its welcome for sure. But it also doesn't have, like, you know, early film history comedic timing where it's really like fast paced or Like it's got a bunch of a zip to it. I don't know if that makes any sense, but like the one of the first scenes, for example, there's someone up on a ladder, but like burning the edges of a sign, so it looks like it came out of a fire. And then there's people arguing at the foot of the ladder, and of course we know what's going to happen here. Actually, it did catch me a little bit by surprise because I didn't know how much of a comedy this was. Now that I know the tone of the film, this seems very obvious, seems telegraphed from a mile away. But of course, he's going to get stuck up there, right? Something's going to happen with the ladder. He's going to fall off. He's going to get stuck. He's going to hang up there, whatever. But the movie doesn't have like a bunch of quick edits, a bunch of like overwrought like reaction shots. It's like you're saying, it's very kind of like patient and almost documentary style in how it's shot, so that it does build up to a joke. That is the whole point of the sequence, is to set up mostly a visual gag, but it doesn't have like a manic pace to it that's kind of fueling the comedy. The comedy kind of builds more slowly and maybe more naturally to we get to these different points. But a lot of these types of things is what the movie revolves around. There's a prize table or a raffle table that people keep stealing from. There's some like actual scenes talking about that, lines of dialogue, but it's also kind of this the thing that's running in the back of the movie, where they return to that joke maybe 8 times in these 70 something minutes, where there's going to be another shot of the table. There's even less stuff than there was before. I gotta say, my favorite, I don't know why, my favorite gag of the film, Jericho, is when a pearl necklace comes undone and all the pearls go flying. I don't know why. I found it so funny just to watch them like get down on their hands and knees and pick them up. Maybe it's something about how it's not shot in a way that is pushing me towards like clocking the humor. It's not shot in like a typical comedic fashion, but just kind of watching like how long the scene is too. They're just picking up more and more pearls over and over and over again, and there's some like horn dog action going on under one of the tables too. Yeah. Like that whole thing, just the pace and how long and drawn out it was, I thought was hilarious. And for those who haven't seen it, I mean, this sounds like maybe nothing. Like I'm sure that doesn't sound exciting or anything that's like a big reveal or whatever. But I found that really funny. And that's the kind of humor this movie delivers start to finish. I think this is a satire, but either I'm not, you know, connected enough with the culture at this time to pick up on it, or it's a pretty loose target of satire, because I can't imagine that Foreman and company are specifically trying to send up volunteer firemen. Like that doesn't seem to be what their ultimate target is. So is the target just general government? Like just the idea of like any government agency, you're going to run into this type of ineptitude, these types of hijinks. I mean, I do like that it culminates in the most ironic kind of situation they can find themselves in as a fireman's celebration. That's very humorous as well. But I get the tone of it as being satirical, but I'm not too confident on the specifics of the target or why or if that's particularly biting. But on a surface level, I think this is a very watchable movie that sets up a lot of humorous scenes that I enjoy watching play out. I don't know how many layers deep I'm getting beyond that, or I'm even meant to get beyond that, but it's definitely a fun watch, I would say, pretty easily. So as a straight comedy, I'm in on the Fireman's Ball. Jericho, you agree, or is there a bunch of stuff I'm missing here? What's your take?
No, I don't really think you're missing much. I mean, I have seen this before, but it's been years. And what struck me most upon rewatch is just, and you keyed in on this, Christian, just how subtle the film's commentary really is. I mean, the movie itself isn't subtle, as you've outlined. It's frenzied. It's almost slapstick style farce. Lots of old dudes horn dogging it, as you said. But you know, reading up a little bit on this, Foreman is definitely jabbing at the Communist Party here. during this time, but it's actually underplayed, that aspect of it, the satire. So much so that I think this far removed, you might wonder why it was so controversial back in 1967, which is pretty much your reaction, not having read up on it, is like, okay, that was kind of a fun, like, you know, light comedic film. But the basic premise of this group of firemen throwing a party in their small town, I think just that alone, as you've said, is inherently funny, even if the satire goes right over your head. Because as a straight up comedy, this thing still cooks. I think it's very funny almost all the way through. And it helps that it's 73 minutes. And that's something we'll talk about with both of these. But I mean, the other film is like just under 90 minutes. So both these films put together, you know, you could, I don't know, Christian, you can watch Babylon twice, right? I mean, it's like,
that's true.
The idea of, you know, and here's like this idea of well-intended plans falling apart and resulting in chaos. I think that's the film's way of critiquing the communist system. But obviously it can be read universally too, you know, a takedown of any bureaucratic system, government or otherwise, any system really that uses rampant corruption in order to succeed can be kind of placed in here from like a modern perspective. You have this gallery of curmudgeonly old cronies. And I think some of the best stuff is just the faces of these guys. Plenty of exacerbated like mugging expressions and reactions as they desperately try to set up this ball for their, you know, 80 something year old retired chairman, who that character is really funny. Just like he's just slowly standing up or just like sitting in a chair. And as the crowd like gets progressively more drunk and disorderly, and the firemen search for, you know, they're basically like looking for the most attractive girls at this thing to line up for the pageant, the escalating sense of absurd comedy is heightened. And I think this, you know, no doubt this probably inspired guys like Armando Iannucci, who did like In the Loop and Veep and Death of Stalin. It's not as manic, or as like, you know, like you're talking about the editing. It's not in that vein, but it just in terms of the comedy and the satire, I think it's very much similar to that. And there's just like a mix of professional and non-professional actors here. I think all the firemen actors I read were actual firemen, like they weren't even actors. And the cast seems to be reacting in real time, like I was mentioning, with the improv kind of feel to a lot of these situations. And some of the best gags simply involve people reacting, like the look on one of the firemen's face when items begin toppling over due to some heavy petting that's going on under a table, or the way the drunk young man oogles his date's ass when he's picking up the remnants of that pearl necklace, the scene you thought was so funny. I mean, were these moments rehearsed? I mean, is the film sexist? Is Foreman wanking just like these crotchety horn dogs? I don't know. Maybe I don't think there's a definite answer there. But although personally, I feel like all these characters are the butt of the joke. If there's any exploitation of like some of the female characters, I think it's just meant to highlight how truly terrible the men are here. I mean, none of the beauty pageant nominees even end up on the stage. It's like this older woman wearing the crown to the applause of the drunken crowd, which is really kind of a send up, and that's pretty funny. And interestingly, I don't think there's no outright statements condemning the Communist Party. But I think to the Czech people of the time, the like repudiation of bureaucracy, just that concept is enough to get the movie's point across. And then the semi kind of like the semi realistic way everything is filmed, like in that kind of improv feeling way, I think it makes it hit harder. It's not set up, and you mentioned this, like a typical silent era comedy or slapstick type of thing. It's filmed in a way like a drama would be, you know, of this period. The humor comes, I don't think the humor just comes from drawn out set pieces or gags, but like the believability of ineptitude, like how believable it is that these people are so inept, is where like the humor for me really comes through. You know, things really unravel in a way that's hilarious, but also you buy it. It's believable. It's kind of a hard movie to discuss in depth since there isn't much of a plot. It's just a, you know, a bunch of moments and funny, you know, you can pick out some funny lines and absurd situations. There is some darker stuff towards the end, and you know, old man's house goes up in flames.
Yeah.
But even these like scenes, which are kind of like poignant and haunting, also have a lot of dark humor to them. And I think the final shot is humorous and sad, which is, I think, a good indication of Forman's view of what was happening in Czechoslovakia while the film was being made. You know, a lot of people were upset and sad, but also you have to maintain a sense of humor just to survive, maybe. So there's kind of that balance. More humor, obviously, in this film than anything else. But I don't think it's just all comedic lightness and there isn't anything else going on. I think he is undercutting the Communist Party here in a way that's very, to us, reads subtle, but I don't know, who knows? It was, you know, eventually it was banned over there. So they definitely got it. But yeah, but it's just like I said, you don't have to, that stuff doesn't matter. You don't even have to clock any of that. I think it's just really funny. Made me laugh repeatedly. And yeah, highly recommended.
Yeah, from both of us. It's interesting what you're saying about Forman with the kind of balance and tones in that one shot being humorous and sad at the same time. I think I've seen most of Forman's American films. This is the first Czech film I had seen of his, but I don't even know if you would call any of his American films comedies, but they all have major comedic elements to them. Sure. You know, Cuckoo's Nest, Amadeus, Man on the Moon, Larry Flint, like all these movies certainly have like a string of humor running through it, but might maybe not even in like an overt comedy. So that's kind of like an interesting thing where this is more comedic. This is definitely the most comedic thing I've seen from him, and kind of the the darkness or the other side of the coin that you see with any of that humor in The Fireman's Ball is kind of a preview to what I think a large portion of his career kind of ends up being in that similar vein. Something I was not expecting to say and sounds weird to say, I think he manages the right tone for this, you know, objectively creepy pageant scenario. As it was, you know, kind of starting and getting into it, I was, you know, I was like, this is an older movie. Like, how, you know, how unsavory is this going to be, or what, to what level are they going to stoop for jokes in this type of setup? But I felt like it was so clear that the men in that situation were reading as pathetic, and even that the women, though, you know, pretty clearly being exploited, I don't know, it seemed to be like they were playing it in this playful way where it seemed like they weren't playing as if it was like a threatening situation or if it was something that really made them uncomfortable. They kind of seemed to go along with it, and where everyone was kind of in on the joke, which I think ultimately pays off with how the pageant ends up going in reality. Like that's part of like connecting that joke to its conclusion, is everyone's just kind of in on this is all ridiculous and dumb. And the old men are clearly kind of mainly at the butt of the joke. But I don't know, as with comedies, I gotta just rattle off the other things that made me laugh, Jericho. Like late in the movie when they're talking about donating the raffle prizes and there's only like three left. And so then the guy's like, all right, I'm gonna turn off the lights and everybody put the stuff back. And then they turn off the lights and there was like three things and now there's one thing. And then they turn off the lights again. Instead of one thing, there's no things. Perfect.
Yeah, like classic. That's
just 10 out of 10 joke. Like I was losing my mind. It's such a simple, obvious thing, but I thought it was absolutely hilarious. And then like the last speech that they're giving to the old guy, it's this beautiful verbose speech.
I need money.
so funny. It's just, it's funny through and through. I mean, obviously, we're at Apatow lengths here, Jericho. We're not going for 2 hours and 25 minutes. We're a svelte 73, and that's pretty easy, or at least Milos Forman makes it look easy to fill that with enough jokes that this is an easy recommend, maybe even a great film, even if you don't know much about the context of it all or getting too deep with it. Just as a comedy, this thing rules pretty hard.
I agree.
All right, and now time for something different.
Oh, okay.
See what I did there? Because the movie, Friends, is called Something Different. This one written and directed by Vera Chitilova. It stars Ava Basakova, Vera Uzalakova, and Joseph Langmiller. The synopsis is much longer on this one, so bear with me. Two stories are simultaneously told. One dutiful mother progressively becomes a frustrated woman who is the only one assuming the family responsibilities of working at home and looking after her only son, whereas her husband works all day, does not appreciate his wife's efforts, and the only thing he does by the time he gets home is to read the newspaper and watch soccer matches. On the other hand, a female gymnast prepares for her last competition before her career retirement, but faces pressure from her trainer and a lack of motivation to keep going. The film depicts frustration on both sides and parallels two worlds dominated by men where women do not receive any recognition, and in case they do, it is momentary. There's some commentary in that synopsis.
We don't even need to review it, this movie.
Yeah, that did a lot of the heavy lifting for us. So this is another notable film. This is Chitilova's debut film. We got 85 minutes on this one, so another light work. You can watch this twice before Babylon is over, as Jericho would put it, for sure. and as the synopsis said, it's ping-ponging back and forth between the kind of stories of these two women. And I think one of the really interesting things about it, I imagine this will be a big part of the review, is the film presents those two stories and doesn't do any of the homework for you, so to speak, for the audience in connecting those dots or really calling it out in bold script what the comparison or contrast means or why it's happening, but just kind of lets the stories do the telling for her, which I think is a really fascinating aspect of this movie, and a really kind of bold and confident first story, first screenplay, first feature film from Chitilova. It's exciting storytelling to see, I think, from this perspective. And Jericho, I'm really curious to hear what you got out of these two parallel stories and what you think Chitilova's getting at with portraying these two stories back to back. Or not back to back, simultaneously, going back and forth over and over again.
Right. Yeah, so this one isn't as well known. Chitilova, obviously, Daisies is the one most people talk about, the one we've both seen. But as I was kind of scrolling through, deciding what to watch, this one really stood out to me. And I guess reading up on it a little more, it's seen as one of the breakout films of the Czech New Wave. And while maybe it isn't stylistically as bold as Daisies, I think it's no less revolutionary in its own way. For one thing, much like with Daisies, it's an early example of feminist cinema from this region. It focuses exclusively on two female characters navigating their lives. They each have their own unique challenges. The men depicted here are either aggressively disinterested or aggressively chauvinistic. Basically, white men in full view, right, Christian? The film is shot in stark black and white. It's handheld cameras. So it's got that kind of new wave style, but this is less avant-garde and more naturalistic than some of the other things that you might slot, at least when you're talking French new wave. I know this is different. But the aesthetic flourishes are mostly in the editing. There's a lot of clever transition cuts between the two women storylines here. This busy housewife overwhelmed by her domestic life, and then the gymnast that's training for this upcoming competition, who's played by real-life Olympic gold gymnast Eva Bosakova. I think I'm saying that right. So the film, it straddles that documentary fiction kind of territory that we've really gotten used to over the decades. But here, you know, 1963, I mean, it still feels fresh and modern watching it now. And what's so great, I think, about this movie, among many things, is you're watching these two stories, right? Where you're not much is happening in terms of narrative. Basically just scenes of the women doing their thing, you know. But as the movie kind of like goes seamlessly back and forth, we start to recognize the patterns. So you have the pressure that these women face, societal pressure, emotional pressure. In the case of the gymnast, physical pressure. She's multiple times they remark on how she's at the end of her career. She's old. She's almost 30. Christian, she's an old maid. The way the women are treated by men is highlighted. The housewife character named Vera, as you read in the synopsis, the husband is very standoffish. He's just more interested in reading his newspaper. He can't be bothered. And Eva, the gymnast, is hounded by her various male coaches and trainers as they prepare her for the competition. At one point, one of them even slaps her in the face as kind of like a motivation tool. But the emotional labor that Vera has to take on daily, I also mentioned she has like a small child that she's caring for as well. I think that mirrors the strenuous physical labor Eva endures during these training scenes. I mean, there's emotional and psychological element to Eva's struggles as well, of course, because the mind and body are connected, obviously. But Vera is directionless. She's kind of floating. She's searching for meaning in the mundane. Eva almost has too much direction. Her path is like very rigid. It's like almost predetermined. Vera's like dissatisfaction leads her into like pretty unfulfilling affair with this like random guy who follows her as she's like leaving the grocery store. And Eva's fixation on like athletic excellence leads her into a different kind of dissatisfaction, which is best like exemplified, I think, in these like robotic answers that she gives to reporters to their questions, and also how she's continuously worried about her appearance and her age. And like you're watching this, you can't help but take this as Chitilova's own response, sort of like to being a female artist. Even like in This Is Her First Film, there's an astonishing insight into just the inner lives of women and just how marginalized and how difficult their lives are at the end, and based purely on their gender and nothing else. So the feminist overtones reflect that. But it's not just, you know, themes. I think the style here, too, is thrilling. I mean, the editing I mentioned, the way Chitilova frames things. I mean, there's the opening shot, which is Eva and the camera pulling back, and you see that she's on TV being watched by Vera's son, I think, is an incredible, mm-hmm. like, incredible opening. And there's multiple, like, shots of Eva's body, often cropped like in these interesting ways where we only see her head pop into the frame or her legs or her feet or things are obscured. And I think this movie, Christian, is the perfect palate cleanser after the Fireman Ball's focus on like horn dog and leering men. mm-hmm. And it really makes me want to like dig in deeper to Chitilova's catalog and see more of her stuff, because this is very like sneaky film. It's very subtle. It's doesn't seem to be doing a lot on the surface, but I think it is doing quite a bit. And I thought it was just awesome. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, this is great. And when you talk about some of the directing choices, I mean, talk about this as a debut film. I believe the only woman director who participated in the Czech New Wave movement, and this coming out as an early entry in that movement in film and also being her debut. You think about the thematic implications of what this movie is saying, but then also as a filmic statement, my favorite shot in the film is a scene where we see Ava training, practicing, and the shot is upside down. And as she lifts her leg over her head and does this kind of spin twirl move, that's when the camera moves with her body and reorients itself to flip back right side up instead of upside down. Oh man, that was like, that was showing off in a way that I absolutely loved. I just loved the way in that moment she like mirrored the camera's movement with the movement of the, you know, performer on screen. It was stunning. It wasn't something that distracted or pulled me out of it. I really think that enhanced my interest in locking in with these two women. Really fun stuff. But when it comes to the two stories here, well, actually, I should say, not in any of that camera movement stuff, but you talked about influences a little bit on the previous film. I think that Chitilova in this film is probably an influence on Chantal Ackerman, not in camera movement, but in themes and how to kind of draw things out. A lot of this reminds me of a two-hander version of Jean Dielman, where it's, you know, merely, quote unquote, showing these women's lives in a very, you know, fly on the wall, very, you know, hand off the wheel type of way, where it's literally just depicting them. It adds a layer of complication because it's mirroring aspects of what these women's journeys might be like, or emotional journeys might be like, as they're flipping back and forth, whereas Jean Dielman is just focused on one central character. But I think that there's a similar approach of just having you spend time getting a sense of what this person's life is like. What do they experience? How is their time spent? How are they spoken to? How are they treated? What do they experience? And I think it's really fascinating, the two women that were chosen here, because there's reason to see them as basically, you know, polar opposites, an athlete and a family person, and a life devoted to kind of you know, a physical regimen, and a life devoted to homemaking and caring for children. They seem so dissimilar, but in kind of juxtaposing how they, you know, what their, the monotony of their lives, the repetitiveness of their lives, the way that they are reliant on the men in their lives. Another thing, I think, I know you joked about it, Jericho, like, she's almost 30, so she's old. She's an over-the-hill athlete. I think they said she's like 27, I want to say, at one point. And Vera doesn't feel that old either. She, she's a wife and she has a family, but she doesn't seem that old either. And as we get towards the end of their story, I got this sense of these two women seemingly have so much, you know, agency, so much life to live, so much kind of potential and opportunity ahead of them. But it feels really precarious, like their lives could kind of be taken from them, from an athlete kind of potentially aging out of their sport. And, you know, not to spoil, but to talk around, you know, at a time like this, what kind of power does your husband have in your relationship? And could your life be over, you know, quote unquote, suddenly, if he were to make a decision that you agree with or not? Like, what kind of ramifications are there for that? And at the end of the movie, like, when we last see these characters, I think it's meant to be on a positive note. It's not purely like a downer ending or anything like that. But at least the feeling it gave me was, we have this, you know, like, uptick, and that's where we're exiting the story. but I think we're meant to think about how precarious their lives are, where in just a couple scenes before, it seemed like they could be more lost or have less purpose or be more, have more of their lives controlled by people other than themselves. And so even we're at this moment that's, you know, on its surface, it's ostensibly a happy ending. I think that the link, like the taste in your mouth as you leave that, is meant to be, you know, how delicate of a balance that is. And these women may not have, they may not have as much control as they would like or that they should have to maintain that balance more easily. I mean, unless you think I'm off there, Jericho, unless that's a way off radical interpretation that's not there.
No, I think you're definitely on to something, Christian. Neither of us are scholars here, and we're definitely not, you know, highly steeped in the Czech New Wave. So I think the things you're pulling out, though, are very astute. So I don't disagree at all.
Just riffing, you know, sometimes you just got to riff on these. And even though these are both Czech New Wave films and seem pretty different on the surface, I watched these pretty much back to back in this order that we talked about them as well. I think that's a heck of a time. You fire up your Criterion channel, a couple of sub 90 minute movies that, you know, have a time and place commonality at the least, if not much else. But I thought, I don't know, there's not a lot of obvious connections to them, but I still think that they kind of paired nicely anyway, watching them back to back.
Yeah, I agree. And I did the same thing. Wait, did you watch them both in the same, not in the same day though, right?
Same day. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I watched them in the same order, but not the same day, but yeah, you could watch them back to back. Like, they're both very short and they're both very, very watchable, but it is a good, it's a really good 1-2 punch, a good double feature. And yeah, if you do have Criterion Collection listeners, they have a whole section dedicated to the Czech New Wave, all kinds of good stuff in there. So if you don't have the Criterion channel, I'm sure the films are available elsewhere. I'm pretty sure. At least the Fireman's Ball, I know, is rentable, but I don't know about something different. But
I think one of these was even on YouTube. So yeah, they are available a few different ways. We both watched it on Criterion Channel. Got to fire up that subscription every once in a while. And this was a good reason to do so. Check, Please, I think, was a success, Jericho.
Yeah, it was fun, Christian. I'd love to do some more of these again in the same series in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. There's plenty more that we looked at that we talked about, including in this episode. I think we landed on the right ones. I think that was a good pair of films, good discussion between them. So I think we land on the right ones. But yeah, we could definitely revisit this. You know, no announcements because everything's up in the air with us and has been for a while. But we're talking about all three of us reuniting, Jericho. That's potentially in the works and got a pretty fun theme. I don't think we should announce it, but
no,
just put the cheese out there. I think it's a pretty fun idea that we're doing.
Oh yeah, I'm really excited about this next one if it happens, but it takes all three of us, so we'll see. So yeah, we don't want any kind of premature, you know, we don't want all the third act fanboys out there, fangirls, fan people to get, you know, too excited about this and it not happen. So but if you're listening and we do see people are downloading the show, please feel free to reach out to us. Send us a message, email us at thethirdact@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter.
The Third Act Podcast.
Sorry, the Third Act. Yeah, this is Christian. Christian does all this. So
no, you're third doing act great.
Gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, which I don't think we really use, but, and then, you know, go ahead and throw us a rating or a review or something. We haven't got one of those in a long time.
I haven't even checked those in a while. So maybe we have that. Who knows?
Yeah, we just, we know people listen and appreciate, but it helps other people find the show and it helps us to keep it going. Cause you know, we all need that little bit, that little jolt of like, hey, people are listening, people are enjoying it. So, and if you have any more ideas for us, themed episodes, old films, whatever. Just throw it out there, man. Don't be afraid.
Yeah, we're in, just weird, whatever floats our boat territory with coming up with things to talk about. So we're pretty easily influenced. By the way, speaking of reviews, Jericho, I think I sent this to you, but we did get a review on the Pinocchio episode from Myra, who was waiting patiently for months for us to finally record that. She said, ugh, I adored this episode. Whilst initially it seemed to all be in jest, you guys delivered big time. Super grateful to Armando for such an earnest discussion of Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio 2. Tears were definitely shed. Amazing. So you don't have to write in that kind of, that amount of support. We love it. But that felt like a once in a lifetime thing. People were crying listening to us, Jericho. Can you believe this?
Well, that was a Myra adjacent episode because it was directed towards her. I'm bummed I wasn't able to be on that, but we're not trying to elicit tears from every listener, but if we do, whether or not you come up with the idea or not, it's totally cool. You could tell us about it or keep it to yourself, but to know that this, to be serious for a minute, there's any kind of impact or any type of response from other people out there listening to us just drone on, that it's encouraging. So we like to hear about it.
I'm sure someone cried during this episode when I talked about that guy falling off a ladder. I'm sure someone was moved to tears during that review. It's gotta be. All right.
Guarantee.
Good episode. Thanks everybody for hanging out with us. Jericho did the outro stuff, email, find us on social media. Hopefully we'll be back as a trio next time. But until then, remember, dear listeners, that the greatest act of all is the third act of the rest of our lives. Make the best of it and have a good night.